Hey everyone, this is Stelly FT.
And this is Heaton Cha.
And in today's episode of the Startup Chat, we're going to talk about investor relationships.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life. And hopefully, while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
Yeah, we want you to do your best.
I know that there's tons of content out there around how to raise money, how to approach investors, how to make a pitch to get money. And we get a lot of feedback from you people that you want us to talk more about how to deal with investors. One topic that is not as much written about and shared about in the startup community is, you know, once you get that money, how do you cultivate a relationship with those investors? How do you strengthen? How do you get more ROI out of that? What kind of mistakes do lots of founders, and especially the two of us, have made in the past? So we wanted to dig into this less explored space when it comes to raising money and dealing with investors, which is, you know, how do you maintain and cultivate a relationship with your investors?
Yeah, I think this is a great thing. And just recently, I actually ended up doing a couple tweets about raising money and asking people if they'd like feedback on it and if they'd get on the phone with me to share their experience. And it's been one of the most successful things I've done in terms of just getting people to talk to me about an idea or, you know, the problems they have. And just in the last week, done about 20 interviews with my partner. And we've learned a ton about raising money in the process. So this could be more
shit.
Timely. And it was two tweets, and we got about 50 to 80 emails already.
Wow, that's crazy.
Of people that wanted help. Yeah, so we're, you know, so this is a timely topic. I know we've been meaning to talk about this for a while, but anything investor related, it seems like it's a great, you know, it's a thing that a lot of people have a lot of questions on. So.
Cool.
I'm excited to talk about it.
So let's dig a little further into these tweets and some of the conversations that you had, and then we can share some of our thoughts and maybe past experiences on the topic. So one thing that I'm curious about is what initiated you sending out these tweets? Why did you do it now? What did you want to get? And then having these 20 conversations with people, were there any like common themes or anything that stood out as something you hadn't heard before? Just share a little bit more about that kind of recent experiment.
Yeah, absolutely. So the reasoning behind it is we both wanted to explore fundraising and learn more about people's experiences with fundraising. Well, one of the reasons, you know, is I put out some content on investors, and I noticed that there's actually not that much great content about investors, or there's just a ton of content everywhere about it. So one of the big things is, can we create content to help people with this? Was one of the theses that we had. More importantly, we're noticing that there aren't any standardized solutions either. Like people are still using spreadsheets, like Google spreadsheets, to manage the whole process, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. But we've obviously gotten a few dozen different spreadsheets now, and they all look, you know, a little bit the same. A little bit different. But one thing we learned is that the people that are more successful at fundraising actually have a process when it comes to choosing their investors, talking to reaching out to them, finding people that know them and reaching out to them, having the conversations, and then putting these investors in a bucket depending on what the response was. And so the biggest learning is that even though there isn't a tool or a standardized process, people have created their own. And the people that are most successful actually diligently use that process.
I love that. And that makes so much sense, right? And people that have a process, that have a strategy and a way of, you know, executing on that fundraising campaign, if you want to call it, that those people have more success than people that kind of just go with the flow, send out a bunch of emails, do a bunch of things, and are a little bit more erratic around the whole thing. That seems to make a lot of sense. When it comes to what we want to focus on in this episode is what happens after you've got the money, right? And not so much technically what happens, like which bank account the money goes to and what you're allowed to do with it or not, but more so what happens with your relationship with those investors. I'll share some of my thoughts in terms of like how not to do it, because I think I've made a lot of mistakes when it comes to this in the past, which is to say that you know, some people, I think some people are really good, have adopted a process of being really good on keeping their investors up to date on what's going on in the company in a way that's not too hands-on, that doesn't take too much time, too much energy, too much effort, but that empowers the investors to have context. So when they need help, the investors can give help right away, as well as empowers the investors to kind of passively spot opportunities where they can be helpful or they can lend advice or make a connection. So I know a bunch of startups and founder friends of mine that are just really great at sending out regular updates once a month, at the later stage, maybe even once a quarter, in the very early stages, maybe once a week, depending on what's happening. And just sharing some key numbers, some key things that are going on, and maybe an ask or a struggle or a challenge that the company has, kind of allowing all investors to be in the loop and passively be helpful or useful to them. And it seems like investors, you know, a lot of my friends who are investors love these types of founders, and they are really frustrated with the types of founders like myself, which, you know, in the early days, honestly, when we're kind of super early, I would send out updates every week, especially with a few of our investors that I thought were particularly thoughtful and were able to help. And then eventually, as the business grew, as the company grew, and as we kind of disconnected from what we originally did when we raised that original round, you know, the updates got less and less frequently until at some point with most of our investors, I stopped kind of sending updates, and we communicated whenever they were around the area or I was close to them. Hey, do you want to grab a coffee or something? But the catch-ups were very irregular. So I think I did a fairly poor job in communicating and keeping the relationship really thriving with many of the investors. And I've seen some of my founder friends that have done a really good job. So I thought to share both kind of that mistake as well as how to do it. I'm curious to hear kind of your experiences in developing, maintaining, growing the relationships past the investment.
Yeah, I mean, once they've invested, it's a different story, right? They're actually invested in your company, and you know, it's your job to give them updates at whatever cadence makes sense for you. So yeah, I totally hear you. I've been good, bad, and ugly about this situation myself. You know, when I had, you know, investors and was responsible for that. So one thing is, I'll put out an example of not a literal one like in writing, but I'll give an example of a founder who I advised them. What he did is he actually just changed the format a little bit, but essentially every week he sends an email update, and it's the same email update that his whole team gets, and it's all aligned around their KPIs. So their key performance indicators and how the health of the business. It is a SaaS business. There are a couple other components to it, but overall it's a SaaS business. And he just shared, you know, the wins, the losses, and the MRR growth. And it's on a weekly basis. And sometimes every quarter there's a little bit more of a, you know, involved update with a little more data. And he has color coding, green, yellow, red, to represent various things and whether they're on target or not. Now, I use the on target thing pretty specifically because basically what he does is they have pretty deliberate quarterly goals in their business around MRR and a couple other metrics that are important to them. And then what he does is he basically shares, and I'm sure he wouldn't mind, so I'm just going to go through kind of roughly his format. He wouldn't mind, meaning he needs to go do a blog post on this at some point. It's one of the best things I've seen. But it's basically, he has weekly notes at the top. He has Q3 progress. This is literally one he sent 2 days ago. He has Q3 progress, which includes current customers, new customers, any product updates. And then he's got a little diagram at the bottom that describes the color coding. And every bullet in those areas, the current customers, new customers, and product, he's got this. He's got basically color coding where it makes sense. And the codes are this. He has dark blue, which is ahead of pace, light blue, which is on pace, and I think that's more for the product initiatives and stuff, as well as the KPIs. And then he has yellow for medium risk, red for high risk, gray for TBD or reprioritized, and green for achieved. And he basically marks everything exactly like that, if necessary. So in a lot of these, he had no markings this time, and there's a bunch of blues, because I think he added the blues recently. But it's been an iterative process of improvement. And he's been able to keep everyone in the loop from an advisor like me all the way to his lead investors that are on his board. And this is also the same email the whole staff gets every week.
That is dope. So that's obviously really, that's a really nice process. And it's easy, although it's probably a lot of data that he's able to share, it's very easy to parse. And for you as somebody that's receiving this email to kind of zoom into the relevant parts of the parts that pique your curiosity or your interest. Maybe you're more interested in the red, you know, the ones that are currently at high risk, or maybe you're just interested in reading the entire context, but it gives you kind of obviously a really nice formatting that allows you to consume a lot of data with very few, with a minimum amount of effort and time.
And that one's weekly. So let me, before I finish on just this first pass of kind of investor updates, I think the emails are really critical. No matter what anybody tries to say, like that's one of the easiest, best ways to keep people updated. So I'm going to give an example of another one where the founder, she's raised a bunch of money now, and has been sending these updates. I think she does them about quarterly, although you can't quote me on this because I don't think they're exactly quarterly. So she does them when she feels like it. So she's definitely not on a strict cadence, but it's another SaaS business. And I'm just going to lay out the her format. So for her, I think she actually does them monthly. So for her, she has KPIs, and the KPIs, and this is at the top of the email, you know? It's basically paying customers, MRR, net MRR growth, customer churn, team, and runway. So all of a sudden, you know in these six bullets exactly what's going on. How much time do they have? How many people are on the team? What's the churn? What's the MRR growth? What's the actual MRR? And how many paying customers? So you have a succinct, like right away, if I looked at any SaaS business with these metrics, I'd get a very good high-level view of what's going on. Now, if I remembered what happened last month or the month before, which I don't even have to because she talks about MRR growth in here, then I could even compare off of these six things that are all the same all the time. And the other email had a lot of these components, but it was on a weekly basis. So the cadence was a little bit different. Because the cadence was different, the content was a little bit more dense. And he sends that to the whole team. In this case, it's just succinct. There's six metrics. There are metrics based on the business and based on the company. With the team and the runway. And then the last thing she has is she basically calls it key events, and she basically has good and bad. It's really simple. In this one, there were 5 bullets on good, 2 bullets on bad. And then the last thing she has is the asks. So it's basically, it's a very common thing a lot of, you know, venture-backed companies would do. But basically, it's like, what am I asking of my investors? So she's got different things about hiring or, you know, other things that the company needs that she thinks that investors might be able to help with. So that's another great format I would recommend. But again, for me, it's like I get a ton of these, or I don't get a ton of these based on the investments I've made. And I'm in the range of about 80 different investments or advisory roles now. And the state we're in of this stuff is pretty pathetic. Like, people don't do these kind of emails and they don't figure out a standard structure. And then, you know, your advocates, your investors who could be advocating for you aren't necessarily able to as much as they could.
So let's talk about, so I love these two examples. And I think it's pretty obvious. This is one of these typical examples where it's like, everybody, I think, gets why this is useful, but it takes a little bit of discipline to do. And I think that's partially why not all founders do this as well as they could. I'm sure there's also other reasons. Sometimes, usually when people go quiet when things go bad, which is the time that you should be really loud, you know, giving lots of updates to get more help. And to also, once shit hits the fan and you really need to like pick up the phone and call somebody, that person already now feels like they know what this call is about. They have context and they feel motivated to help versus they haven't heard from you in 6 months. And then all of a sudden you have this urgent call with a million requests to them. So sometimes people get quiet because things aren't going well and they kind of retreat. But if that's not the case, a lot of times founders just don't do this because it seems like there's a million other things that are more important. But the founders that do, I find, are there's a good correlation between founders that do this and founders that are somewhat successful, although it's not, you know, it's not an exclusive thing. But when we talk about relationships, so one part is like, how do you communicate or how do you keep your investors up to date in the loop? How do you maintain kind of a steady flow of information to them? But then there's other dimensions as well, right? So you took their money. More likely than not, you didn't know these people for years and years or decades before you took the money. So kind of the relationship prior to raising the round was somewhat still fresh, I would say, in most cases. So now, as the business evolves and progresses, there's going to be different paths that your relationship can take with individual investors, right? And there's a difference between angels and super angels and professional investors like VCs and all that. But there's going to, if we want to simplify it, there's going to be some of these people that turn out to be, if we want to highly simplify it, there's going to be people that are useful and people that are turned out not to be as useful to you for a variety of reasons. Maybe personality-wise, you don't jive. Maybe they are micromanaging you and they're creating a lot of noise and friction. Maybe they were passionate about your company when you were doing X, but now that you pivoted to doing Y, they just don't care about it anymore. There's a million different reasons why they're not as useful anymore to you, except for the money that they put in your business. They can't help you. They're not really useful. They're not really, it doesn't feel like a positive relationship. And then there's people that are, for a variety of reasons, right? Maybe they're really hands-on and able to help and advise in very specific ways. Maybe they have a great network and they're able to open doors. Maybe it's something completely different. But there usually, you know, if you raise money from a group of people, it's not like most of the times all these people will create equal value after their initial investment, just by the mere fact that they've put money in and they have the status of being an investor. How do you think about these two buckets, and do you differentiate, you know, both in the way that you communicate with those two? And more importantly, or more curiously, what do you do with the people, that the investors that have put in money, and independently from if you want to give them the quarterly or monthly or weekly update like everybody else or not, for one reason or another, they don't seem to be able to add a lot more value day to day, or week to week, or month to month to your business, or maybe they even subtract value when they interact. How do you deal with those people? Let's zoom in on that a little bit.
Yeah, I think there's three buckets. So valuable, neutral, and negative, right? Positive, neutral, and negative, if you want to make it really simple. Just because I wouldn't want to bucket the neutral. I wouldn't bucket the neutral and the negative in the same bucket. I would say a positive investor would be somebody who's always there, regardless of the situation, and willing to help out, much like another founder would, right? Like, we know founders help founders, right? So that's positive. I think you went through that. In my mind, the neutral side of it is also like, I don't know if I treat them the same as the positive, because I think the positive is someone who's helpful and you always want them to know what's going on and where you need help. Because quite frankly, if people gave you money, like, they should be helping you, right? I don't think there's any ifs, ands, or buts about it, in my opinion. So if someone's neutral, it's not like you treat them the same as the sort of positive folks. You wouldn't necessarily go to them for help in certain areas, like personally or anything like that, in terms of like one-to-one emails about issues in the company that you think, you know, you'd like their feedback on. Also, many of them, even if they are positive, they might not have the time, frankly speaking, because these are investors. You're not the only investment they've made, most likely. And if you are the only investment they've made, maybe you shouldn't have taken their money. But that's usually a different story. And so on this neutral side, like, I just like to treat them as they get the standard updates. You know, and they don't get any special treatment or anything, or they don't get, you know, I wouldn't email them in a situation where you needed help, because they're probably not going to be helpful. They'll be neutral. So with them, I'd give them the updates just like you would, whether it's a monthly or quarterly cadence, depending on your business, or weekly if you are also sending the same stuff to your team. Again, it depends on your style. And so I feel like positive and negative almost get treated the same, except the positive, you know that they'll help you in certain situations, so you'll go talk to them. And then let's talk about the negative, because I think that's where most people get challenged, right,
yeah.
Sally?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the trickiest bucket, right?
Yeah, that's the bucket where you're just like, crap, like, I took their money, and they're not just not helping me, which is okay, all right, they're just money, great. But they're actually, you know, almost actively going against everything.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So you're going to love this, but like, first of all, make sure you don't get those kind of people in your business, right? In any way possible. Because whether it's a team member or an investor, or even an advisor, if someone's negative about your business or negative on you and you don't appreciate it, or it's not helpful, well, you shouldn't have got them in the first place. There's a whole bunch of things you can do up front to see. One of the things, I'm just going to suggest one, you might have a few others before we keep going, but like one is like, go talk to people who they invested in before you take their money. It's like, you know how many people the investors talk to before they invest in you? Quite a few usually about your space, your market, you, your team. Why wouldn't you go talk to somebody who's invested, you know, who they've invested in, or a bunch of somebody's? And I just don't see founders doing that. What's your experience with that?
I'm like, this is an episode on itself. Like, as you were talking about, like, how to deal with
these, right.
Like, and this is such a big topic.
People diligence. We can just make it the next
one. Yeah, we should just, we're going to roll into this in the next episode. So just for me, I'll just throw out one little fact that I've observed. I'm curious to hear you because you have a lot of pattern recognition here and a lot of data. Almost nobody I know that have raised a founder that has raised or a founding team that has raised for the first time. I don't know any team or any specific founder that has raised money for the very first time and has not made this mistake of taking some investors on board that are not helpful afterwards. So this seems to be like a typical first time mistake that seems very hard to avoid.
Do you mean neutral or you mean negative?
I mean, well, it depends on the definition of neutral and negative, but not if it's negative as in somebody that really like fucks up your business or really disrupt it in a massive way. No, not necessarily every time, but there's negative in the sense that they're not actively trying to like drag you down and kill your business, but whenever they do interact, they subtract a little bit of value. They're not really helpful.
So that's negative to me, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like that, all that is a negative bucket. I just want to stay away from neutral because I think most investors are neutral.
Yeah, that's true. I think the vast majority is neutral.
Like if you just bell curve, you'd be like, all right, most are in the fat middle right there. That's neutral.
Yeah.
There's some that are positive. Hopefully you have at least one, you know?
Yeah.
And the rest are negative.
So I would say that there's almost every startup has raised money for the first time has at least one investor in their first round that is in the negative bucket. That's my experience from like all the founders that I know, all the startups that I know. The second time around, I do believe that that's the case because when raising for the very first time, even very astute and very smart founders, they tend to, because they want the money, because they want that, because that investor comes from a great firm or even that investor's high profile or whatever, there's many reasons that makes them highly likely to overlook negative signals in the fundraising process. They're all overly biased towards wanting to take the money and wanting to work with that investor and selling themselves on the idea that this firm or this investor should also invest because they have this expertise or because they're great at this or because of some other reason. But deep down, they knew even in the early fundraising time that maybe I'm going to get into trouble with this guy or maybe this guy has a totally different vision for our business than we do. But they kind of push that aside because they're biased towards wanting to say yes to money. That's at least my experience. I might be wrong. I have zero research or data on this, but all the founders I know, all the startups that I know that raced the first time seem to have made that mistake at least once.
Yeah. I mean, that's very common because, you know, if someone's willing to give you money, you want to take it.
Yep.
You know, I think it's as simple as that. And so, yes, the pattern I've seen is exactly the same. They'll make the mistake and they won't know any better. And then, you know, they'll get hit with it later. But again, there's ways to prevent it, and there's also different types of negative. So, you know, you want to get into some of that?
Yeah, let's touch on that a little bit, and then we'll use it as a cliffhanger for the next episode where we might dive in a lot deeper into this. But negative. I mean, there's a few that come top of my mind, and then you already said one. You said one great thing to prevent people from raising money from negative quote unquote investors, which is get references, talk to people that have worked with them, especially people that work with them for a while, not just like last week or something. People that have a relationship with them, especially people that have gone through highs and lows, right? So there's some good data to be explored in terms of how did this investor help when things were really tough.
Yeah.
But and on top of that, I'll just add a second one, which is trust your gut. If everything looks perfect, but you have a weird feeling about this person or you don't really enjoy the conversation with that investor, just leave it alone. No matter how tempting it is to overwrite your intuition, it usually turns out to be true. And then lastly on this is try to work with investors. I mean, at least in my opinion, most investors might get into the negative bucket if their value or their interest is highly specified in an area where you are at a very early stage, but there's a good chance that you might pivot out of that area. So if you're not post product market fit and you're still very like early stage, taking money from an investor that is just highly passionate about this one very specific niche you're in right now and might be super like uninterested or super negative around you changing that down the line, that might be also just a bad idea or a good way to prevent that. Somebody that's just not a good investor, but somebody that is passionate about a specific space or a very specific idea. So if you ever change or switch or pivot or expand, they will hate that idea and they will make that difficult for you. That might also be somebody to try to avoid. In terms of the buckets of negative that somebody can be in or the different flavors, I think the lightest version of negative is somebody that is not bothering you, is not micromanaging, is not reaching out to you all the time. So they wait for you to get in touch with them when you need them. But when you do, they're really not useful or helpful. They're just never able to provide any advice, making a connection, help with anything. So this might be neutral, but for me, it's negative because neutral to me is they don't bother me, but when I ask for help, once in a while, they're able to help. This is somebody that's never able to help. And maybe even when I try to ask for help, they have very bad ideas. They are wasting my time. They are, you know, counterproductive in one way. They give advice that turns out to be really bad advice. So that's the person that's passively negative. Like they're not actively in between your legs, you know, distracting you. But once you reach out to them, they're never able to help and they're usually wasting your time. And the worst version is the instead of passively negative investor is the actively negative investor. That's the person that sends you emails every day with their ideas, that wants to be a product manager, that wants to come and work from your office, that wants to be in your meetings, that is just pushing you in all kinds of, that basically tries to direct your business in a specific way they want it to go. And they're just creating a lot of noise and distraction one way or another. And they're requesting, they're creating work for you in one way or another. And that can obviously escalate to be really dramatic if they're on the board and they're like, you know, lobbying and pushing you out of the business. But it can also be somebody that doesn't have an official seat on the board or anything else, but it's just constantly creating noise, sending emails, making calls, showing up at your office, just bothering you. And distracting everybody around you. Those are the really what I would call an actively negative investor.
Yeah. So let's give some tips on what people can do about this. How about that?
Yeah, let's do that. Well, here's my first tip. I think one thing that people don't understand is that the relationship that you have with investors needs to be understood intellectually as well as emotionally as a relationship between equal partners, not equal in rights, but equal in the sense of respect and what it's a give and take between two equal adults versus a child-parent relationship. And I find that way too many founders, because of the stature that many investors have, they feel a little bit like they're the child and the investor's the parent. So they are, you know, they're